Well, it's 6 o'clock here in the nation's capital, and that means it's time for another edition of News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. Heaven knows there's plenty to talk about. Certainly, we've got Eric Garner. We've got all the, unfortunately, it hurts me to say this, we've got all the normal things that we've come to expect. A number of black people shot by the police. There's no indictment, which has come to be sadly the norm. Now, my point, let me make a quick point. It has been the norm for many years. This has been going, this didn't just start yesterday. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people who aren't in touch with the black community are looking at this saying, man, you know, this is becoming an epidemic. This is terrible that this start. No, that's not the case at all. Black people have been complaining, you know, let's face it. I don't know if you paid any attention to any of the old films of the marches in the 60s. The cops were beating black people, treating them bad. In L.A., they shot 7 unarmed black men. I mean, this is not new. It's been going on and going on and going on for a long, long time. Now, we have video cameras that can get a lot more information. We got social media that can get it out quicker. You know, we've got the news is more likely to report it now because it's going to hit social media. And to some extent, the news is competing with social media to scoop the latest big thing. And they can't take any chances of missing something. Furthermore, it's my opinion, maybe wrong, just an opinion. I think the fact that there is a black president has an effect on that, and this is how. I think to some extent there's some people in the black community who probably feel like, you know what, we got a black president. That's where we are now. We are not going to put up with this anymore. Just that idea that there's a black president says, we ain't going to put up with this. We are not second-class citizens, although in the eyes of the criminal justice system, we're not second-class citizens. We're not even citizens because citizens are protected by the Constitution. So apparently black people are not protected by the Constitution, as you should well know by now if you've been paying any attention, which would mean that in reality, in my opinion, black people are not citizens of the United States. Have we ever been? I don't really think so. If you think back, let me just throw this out real quick. During World War II, when the German POWs were being transported on a ship back from the European theater, as they like to say, the white sailors ate first, the white German POWs ate second, and the black people who worked in the kitchens ate last. So are you going to tell me that black people were citizens when the people who were trying to kill, who were trying to take over this country, when the fascists who were trying to, you know, do the most horrible things imaginable to Americans, but they were still above black folks? So black people couldn't possibly be citizens. During the Civil Rights Act, to me, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act are proof that black people weren't citizens, because citizens didn't need those things. They're already in the Constitution for citizens. But if you're not a citizen, you got to get something, a little bit something extra in writing, because the Constitution doesn't cover you. And even now, let's face it, if you are a citizen, then what happened to Eric Garner is a crime. But if you're not a citizen of the United States, apparently, what happened to Eric Garner isn't a crime. For any citizen, it's a crime. And I say that because citizens are protected by the Constitution. And if you're not protected by the Constitution, I do not consider you a citizen of the United States. Speaking of criminals. No. My dear friend and partner in crime, Mark Levine, has just traipsed into the studio, and I'm sure he's going to have plenty. Mark, what's happening?
You saw the video, right, Garland?
Yeah.
You watch that video and you see a guy that he just wants to be left alone.
Yep.
Frankly, there's no evidence he was even selling the cigarettes.
Good point.
He was claimed to have been selling. And my guess is that crime, selling untaxed cigarettes, is about like speeding. I mean, it's against the law, and they could issue him a citation, and he has to appear before a judge.
Yeah.
And they could have just done that.
In New York. And as you said, on that date, there's no evidence that he was selling cigarettes.
I didn't see any.
No. Did anybody ever say that?
But you know what? Obviously, if he did sell untaxed cigarettes,
heaven forbid,
you know, I fully admit I have gone faster than the speed limit.
Yeah.
I conceded. I admit it. Come take me away.
I jaywalked today. I jaywalked coming to the station.
I jaywalked coming to the station.
Good thing Darren Wilson wasn't there. I'd be a dead man.
No question about it.
Let me read this to you and tell me what you think. Guess what it's from? It is from the. It's an excerpt from the New York City, the New York Police Department Patrol Guide, and it says, "Members of the New York City Police Department will not use chokeholds. A chokehold shall include, but is not limited to, any pressure to the throat or windpipe which may prevent or hinder breathing or reduce intake."
So clearly, the officer should be fired under that.
Mm-hmm.
But the real question is, what are the consequences of using a chokehold? Is it a crime for a police officer to use an unauthorized means that kills somebody?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I mean, it may not be murder. It might be voluntary manslaughter or something like that. I was really surprised. I wasn't surprised so much in Ferguson. It was clear the prosecutor didn't want to bring evidence.
Right, yeah.
And there was at least some contradiction among witnesses. So this was a video. I mean, I'm all for body cameras. This was something for all of us to see. I don't know anyone who's seen the video who argues this cop did the right thing. But apparently they brought the cop into the grand jury proceedings to explain panel by panel what he did. Now, I've talked with prosecutors.
No, they don't do that.
No, my cousin's a prosecutor. And I asked her, and she'd never heard of a case like that. Usually a grand jury, they say a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich. You go in there, and you might bring one. You might just be the prosecutor alone.
Right.
Or you might just bring in the police officer who arrested the guy.
Yeah.
You tell a very one-sided story. That's what it's all about. It's just probable cause. It's just getting to the jury. It's just a beginning procedure. If the prosecutor wants an indictment, he gets one. This prosecutor evidently didn't want an indictment. He didn't want one at all.
Yeah. When you look at this, generally, and you know, I was a law enforcement officer for years. I dealt with grand juries. Generally, the only thing that happens, for those of you who don't know, is usually the prosecutor actually charges the person first. Then he goes in, and the only thing that he or she is doing is establishing probable cause for the charge, which is the lowest standard you could possibly imagine. So that's all they're doing. It has been clearly determined by the Supreme Court that the accused has no right to testify, in a grand jury. And the fact is, the matter is that no prosecutor who wants to prosecute a case is ever going to put the person on there, because what you've got is you've got a defense. A defendant who is able to fully, basically, try the case, hear the case,
be subject to cross-examination.
That's right.
See, in a trial, the reason why most criminal defendants don't testify, they have a right not to under the Fifth Amendment, but they also know that anything that old saying, anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law?
Yep.
They know that they'll be cross-examined. They also are not supposed to ask leading questions. Now, I don't know what happened inside the New York grand jury. Nobody does. It's secret, although the prosecutor is trying apparently to release it, and I'm glad. I want to read that. But I have read transcripts of the Ferguson grand jury.
That was a joke.
And in that one, the prosecutor asked the criminal defendant leading questions. Now, leading question, as any lawyer knows, is a question that presupposes its answer.
Yeah.
You weren't really trying to harm Michael Brown, were you?
Right.
You were really scared, weren't you?
Yeah.
You didn't know that you could take him, did you? Those kinds of questions are objectionable.
In fact, at one point they said, you were in fear for your life,
weren't
and
you?
And he said, yeah.
Right. So those kinds of leading questions,
yes.
If a criminal defense attorney were to ask his client those questions, the prosecutor
would object.
The questions would be thrown out. The jury would be told to disregard that question.
Right.
And the judge would severely admonish that lawyer. Again, if it were the criminal defense lawyer, if it were the officer's own attorney doing this, they'd say, you know, you know better, counsel. You know you can't do that. In this case, the prosecutor, whose job it was to put the guy behind bars, was acting in ways more favorable than his own lawyer could under the law.
He acted. Here's the thing about it. The prosecution witnesses, he attacked his own witnesses in Ferguson.
That's right.
They attacked the prosecution witnesses and asked leading questions to help the defendant. Clearly, it was a farce. It was a joke. It was obvious.
Here's the deal. Bob McCullough, the St. Louis County prosecutor, and by the way, he's elected by all of St. Louis County, he wasn't just the Ferguson. If he was, maybe they would have been more suitable to the community. But he's elected by the entire county, and it's his job to decide if there's a case, and if so, to do a grand jury proceeding to put the guy away. Now, you talk to any prosecutor worth his or her salt, and they will tell you a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich. If you want, it's a very one-sided proceeding, a grand jury proceeding, and if you want to put somebody away, it's a really easy thing to do. The simple truth is that Bob McCullough did not want Darren Wilson to be tried. He didn't want it at all. Now, here's the deal. If a prosecutor does not want to try someone,
it's over.
All they have to do, they don't take it to a grand jury. They shouldn't. If you think the guy's innocent, you say, I'm sorry, community. I think the officer's innocent. I'm not going to take it. It's called prosecutorial discretion. It's exactly what President Obama is trying to do with the immigration.
Let me tell you what I've seen, Mark, and you're probably
familiar. If you're not a coward, he would stand up and say, I'm sorry, I don't think there's enough, and take the weight himself. Instead, he tried to blame a grand jury for his own decision.
And let me tell you this. I've seen this. Let's say you got a murder case and you go to the prosecutor. The prosecutor may look at it and say, that's not enough. I'm not going to a grand jury because I believe the person will get off. And if we charge them and they get off because of double jeopardy, we can't come back. That's not enough. Go out, bring me more evidence before I go to a charge this person and go to a grand jury.
And that's a normal proceeding.
That's prosecutorial discretion.
In this case, the prosecutor, instead of saying, I don't think there's enough evidence.
Which he knew he couldn't do because there was enough evidence.
Well, he could have said, if he didn't think there was enough, or the
if he felt that the witnesses
were too contradictory and enough people would say bad things about Michael Brown, although I should say the vast majority of witnesses say he had his hands up. 16 separate witnesses say he had his hands up. Only two or three said he was charging him. Said he was charging him. One of that is Officer Wilson, who needless to say, he has his own bias in the proceeding. So the answer is he didn't want to do it because he'd gotten all the. And here's the other thing. In general, and I think this goes for Staten Island, I think this goes for Ferguson, prosecutors work with police officers all the time.
Yep.
99% of the time, they've got a case. Some police officer was a witness to the case. They're on the stand. They are buddy-buddy. They're close friends. You know, as they say on the TV, that you know, they're two sides of the same coin.
They're
both working together. Okay. It seems to me that when it comes to a case of police violence, there's really not a difficult answer. All you do is you get a prosecutor from another jurisdiction, a special prosecutor, maybe a federal prosecutor, maybe a judge off the bench, someone who's not connected to the local police forces, and if they come in and they weigh the evidence, whatever decision that person makes, it'll more likely be accepted by both sides than to have somebody like this guy who's buddy-buddy with the police.
Whose father, I believe, was killed by a black man. So the thing was a farce, and it was a joke. I mean, we go on and on. There's so many stories. I've got another one here, autopsy. A Milwaukee cop shot a mentally ill black man from above and behind 14 times. The guy was laying on a bench, sleep. The department acknowledged that he committed no crime and that the officer was completely in the wrong. In fact, it says Police Chief Edward Flynn fired Manny, who was the officer, for ignoring departmental rules about dealing with emotionally disturbed people, but refused to prosecute the officer for, quote, making mistakes after he shot Hamilton 14 times.
You know, we've got someone working for us, working for society, who legally has a gun and a right to use it, I have no problem holding them to a higher standard than, oops, I accidentally killed
the
guy.
Look, higher, I'd like to know, at this point, to hold them to the normal standard. Forget higher. We've got another. Listen to this. There's another story. Killings by Utah police outpacing gang, drug, and child abuse homicides. So now, if you see a cop run like for a gang member or a drug dealer, you're considerably safer around a gang member or a drug dealer than you would be around the police because you got a chance with a gang member or a drug dealer.
Do you know how many people were killed by the UK police in 2014?
Well, let me guess. Under five.
Keep going. Less.
Under three.
Less.
Under one.
There were none this
year. Zero.
A couple years ago, there was one, Garland, so they're not perfect.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Do you know how many are in the United States? I'll give you a hint. It's a trick question.
A lot.
We can't know because they're not recorded.
That's right.
It's a trick
Isn't
question.
That funny.
We don't know how many.
The FBI has the. You know
the
what?
The FBI refuses to keep statistics.
The FBI
on
has the UCR, the Uniform Crime Report, where every police department is required. They've got to talk. They've got to report how many crimes, how many arrests, every thing you could possibly.
But not how many are
think
done
of.
By cops.
They have to report to the FBI. It goes into the Uniform Crime Report, which is online, which is sent out. You can see it anywhere. but they don't have to tell you how many people they shot, what race they were, whether they were male and female, what ages they were, the circumstance, nothing.
Whether
they just
justified.
Keep plugging them.
So I think that's, you know, we're looking for ways to get past this. One of the best ways, and I support President Obama in this wholeheartedly, the hundreds of millions of dollars he's given for body cameras.
That's a start.
It's a great start. It might have prevented Ferguson, but obviously it didn't prevent New York City.
Right.
So it doesn't go far enough. Another thing we can do is just simple reporting. I want to know how many people did cops kill.
Yeah,
I want to know how many of those cops were indicted. I want to know what the circumstances were. Let's write them all down. How many were choked? How many were shot? How many of those people were unarmed?
Yep.
I think that it would not be expensive to pass a bill to keep statistics on that throughout the United States.
Now, there's a couple other things. The chokehold, Pantaleo, the chokehold cop, apparently he's been sued three other times for violating the rights of citizens, and guess what race they were?
They're all black.
Yeah, what a shock. One of them recently paid out $30,000. The Tamir Rice case.
They're going to win that civil suit.
Oh, my gosh.
Going to win that silver suit.
You think there's 51% there?
Well, the other thing is, I think juries can send a message through a very high punitive damage award.
It should be $100 million.
And I'll tell you something. It's not just the police. I learned this today. I didn't know it before. Apparently, the EMT, the emergency medical technicians, were negligent as well.
Yep.
They didn't do the CPR they could have done. If you go, actually, on my Facebook page, somebody posted it as a comment. Angry nurse that who watched the video and was livid because she says there are all these things they could have done. They could have pressed him on the chest. They could have done these things to save his life. And
first of all, they were really in no rush, were they?
It didn't look like
Look like they were in a hurry.
They've been suspended as well, but it's not enough to fire people. It's when you have a job that involves life or death, you can't just be fired for doing a bad job. That's why this lawsuit, I hope, is successful, and I hope this is a message. One thing that I should say, though, Bill de Blasio, I think, wants to stop this. I think that even he said that the techniques that the Staten Island officer used were the kind that were used, you know, years ago under Giuliani.
The fact of the matter is, they are prohibited specifically in writing right now.
That's right. That's right.
Right now.
That's right. So I don't understand the lack of an indictment. I got to say, Ferguson didn't surprise me. This one surprised me.
Well, none of them surprised. You know me, Mark. I'm cynical, and I'm always going to say, what color was the cop? He was white. What color was the victim? He was black. Well, then I already know the outcome.
Although you showed me a video, 3 months
ago? Kelly Thomas.
The police officer, this is white cop and white victim, but brutal. I mean, it was worse than the Eric Garner video.
Considerably worse.
I could not watch it. I had to stop watching about 10 minutes in. I just couldn't stand to see the screaming and the pain and the blood. I couldn't take it.
I always tell my listeners to Google, go to YouTube, and the guy's name is Kelly Thomas, and watch the video. The man was beaten
mercilessly
while he screamed and begged for his life.
And he was doing nothing. He was a homeless guy sitting outside
because
he had no place to go. That video, I think it's like 30 minutes long or something.
Oh, it's the worst.
After about 7 or 8 minutes, I just had to turn it off. I just couldn't physically stomach it.
You can't imagine how somebody could look at it, much less be able to do it. Here's the thing about it. He was homeless, and he was mentally ill.
Right.
He was honorary black person. He gets the same treatment.
He wasn't even that mentally ill. He just struck me as someone who's a little tired, a little slow,
It was known. He had schizophrenia.
Oh, he was? Okay,
so he was known as a homeless person who was mentally ill, which was what he was homeless, which is a whole other thing. Mentally ill people, we should do better than that in a society.
But he wasn't resisting arrest. He didn't do anything. He's just sitting by a mailbox, as I recall.
Not to mention, when they were beating him, he was screaming, "I'm sorry, please, please, I'm sorry, please." He was begging for
Eric
his
Garner
life.
Eric wasn't resisting arrest.
No.
You know, they say Michael Brown was. We don't have any video.
No.
We don't know. I mean, that sounds up. But where we have video, and they still don't get indicted, it tells me we have a real problem here. I'll tell you one thing, though. DC does seem to have gotten better. I don't know what you think. I mean, Kathy Lanier, she's putting those body cameras on all police officers, which I think is the right idea. And we really haven't seen tremendous police violence in DC
for
a few years now. It can get better.
Here's one of my thoughts, and there's people that won't agree with it, but this is what I think. There's a lot of black cops in DC. I was a black cop. It's my opinion that if you're a black person, not that it doesn't happen, but you got a much lower chance of getting shot by a black police officer than you do a white. Not saying it doesn't happen, but if you look at these time after time after time, all the ones in the news right now, you look at the guy in Phoenix the other day, they just shot him, he was unarmed. You look at the poor guy who was in Brooklyn, who opened the steps, walked up the steps, they shot him. Every single one, do you ever have to say, the one in South Carolina, the guy's reaching in his car, he shoots him. Do you, as soon as you hear an unarmed man, black man, an unarmed man was shot by a cop, do you ever have to ask what color the cop it was or what color the man was? Do you ever have to do that?
I'm sure we can find one case in a million that's the opposite. Yeah. But you're right. The vast, vast majority are that way. I do think D.C. used to be worse, though. I mean, D.C. used to have...
Oh, what about P.G. County? The, you couldn't get a whole...
I forget, was the World Bank or something, prosecutors, protesters were in, and they were beaten. And so D.C., but my point is it's possible. I don't want people to feel like there is no answer. I think Bill de Blasio, I hope, because based on his rhetoric and based on his record, he's going to get to the bottom of this, and he's going to make sure that this police culture changes. And what I don't know, and maybe one of our listeners can tell us, is that New York prosecutor, that DA, is he separately elected? Because in this case, I really think it's the prosecutor. I mean, bad cops exist, but you need a system that punishes them.
Right, and a system like this, here's what I say. There's not bad cops and good cops. There's a bad tree. You see, this system creates bad, quote, bad cops, from good. In fact, one of the guy that shot Tamir Rice, in Cleveland,
right,
he was fired from another police department. They found him incompetent. Mm. They wrote
12-year-old girl.
Yeah, 12-year-old boy.
12-year-old boy.
12-year-old. There was another police department, and I'll find it and read it to you. They found him incompetent to hold office. They wrote that it can't be fixed regardless of there we go. The cop who shot Tamir was found unfit for duty. And so he was.
When you're found unfit for duty, they need to take your badge away, and they need to take your gun away, and they need to have you be some other job. You can be a toll booth attendant.
Other jobs. He was fired from the Independence Police Department, and let me read what was written.
Missouri.
What was written from the deputy chief, Jim Pollock, wrote: he could not follow simple directions, could not communicate clear thoughts nor recollections, and his handgun performance was dismal. They said he was not mature enough in his accepting of responsibility or his understanding in the severity of his loss of control on the range, and concluded that he should be released from his position. The guy said, now this is, he also wrote, I do not believe time nor training will be able to change or correct the deficiencies.
Wow.
He was fired, and that
do you
was
think
in his,
Cleveland didn't
Cleveland
did,
has
did they the, not read
they
that?
Have already said when they did their background investigation, they didn't read his personnel file from the other department. Well, first
how
of all,
they not read his
negligent
personnel file?
It was negligent. You got negligent hiring, negligent retention. That was negligent hiring.
How do you not ask a police officer how he did at his other place and get a personnel file?
The fact is, he was a police officer, so he was
need another lawsuit. He was forced, more punitive damages.
Yeah, he was forced to resign. Now, here's a guy who resigned from his last department, and you don't want to read what's in there. You're going to hire him and put a gun in his hand?
He was fired.
He freaks out at the range. He can't hit it.
That's sounds like he's mentally ill himself.
Yeah. And what does he do? He pulls up, he shoots somebody within 2 seconds after seeing him, and when they say what happened, he says, I repeatedly told him to put the gun down, and he didn't. And the videotape showed that it was a lie. Now, I got something else I want to throw out there that I don't hear enough from the from New York. This whole, I'm from New York, all of a sudden. But for those of you who don't know, there's this thing they've been dealing with in New York, a concept called the, quote, broken windows theory.
Right.
And basically what they say is if there's broken windows in a neighborhood, you have to fix them. And the slightest little thing in a neighborhood, the slightest little crime, no matter what it is, you have to go after it because these little crimes become big crimes.
This is Giuliani's.
Yep. There was two guys that came up with it. So that's what the New York police, you know, you go after, you wonder why this guy was continually arrested for selling cigarettes. Their idea is you go after the littlest crime and you go after this guy with all your might, and then that will stop crime in New York. Now, here's my question. If they feel strongly that that's the way to stop problems, why don't they apply it to the New York City Police Department? Yeah. Why don't they apply the broken windows theory to the New York City Police Department?
Your uniform button's missing?
The slightest thing,
you lose a day's
you
pay.
Get hammed. Not only that, let's go one further. the New York City government. That's a great apply point. It to the apply it to all point. The council members. If you, oh no, you mean you bought 2-for-1 bananas at 7-Eleven with campaign funds? Well, we got to prosecute you.
That's right.
If they truly believed that the broken windows theory was worked, they would apply it to themselves.
How about you got a call from someone on Wall Street who knows a little bit about that company?
Yes, sir.
Putting those people in jail.
Go after them.
How about the broken windows theory on Wall Street? You know, a lot of broken windows there.
The broken windows theory in New York, they don't really believe in it. It is a method of control. If they believed in it, they would apply it to the police department. They would apply it to the city council. They would apply it to the mayor. The only people that it's applied to, if you look, is poor people. That's the neighborhoods they go marauding through, the poor people.
Frankly, they're the people who can't afford to fix a broken window.
That's it. They go through, and what is that? Selling loose cigarettes? Grab that guy. Take him in.
You know, the crime of selling untaxed cigarettes. I mean, when you think about that, I think that's equivalent to speeding.
It's tax law. It's tax law.
But yeah, but it's what? It's probably $5 per pack or something.
Right.
You know, so when you think about what a tiny crime, I mean, I doubt that's even a jailable offense.
It's
probably just a fine.
I used to work with alcohol and tobacco.
You know, you end up paying your taxes by a few $100. There's a fine and there's a penalty. You don't go to jail.
I used to
much
work,
less $5.
Well, I used to work with alcohol and tobacco tax agents in the state of Maryland, and if I called one of them and said, "Hey, guess what? I got some illegal cigarettes," they'd say, "Ooh, boy, what do you have? A tractor trailer load?" Well, not exactly.
One guy with one pack.
A box truck. I know you got a box truck full. Well, okay, not really. Oh, don't tell me you just called me with somebody for a trunk full of illegal cigarettes. Well, no. Actually, we got a guy that's selling them one at a time. They'd slam the phone down in my ear.
It's
There's
like,
no
you're
way.
Wasting your time.
Yeah, do you expect us to respond for a guy selling a cigarette? Get out of my
it's
face.
It's not even worth issuing a summons, much less arresting him.
Six officers. How much are they paying those officers an hour in New York? They're making probably $80,000 to $90,000
a
year.
Well, you know, Garland, there are no worse crimes in all of New York than selling individual cigarettes. Apparently, there's no murders. No muggings,
mm-mm.
No rapes,
nothing.
No Wall Street crimes. There's no even traffic accidents.
No,
that's the worst crime in all of New York City.
Apparently. And what you've got to do, and not only that, it's punishable by summary execution. Apparently,
yeah, exactly. Oh,
so what we've got is an issue now where nationally, and if you look at the riots, yeah, there's a lot of black people, but you know what else I notice? I notice a lot of young people of various races. I notice people of different races.
Eric Garner wasn't young; he's 43 years old. He wasn't
Well, you know what I think it is? I think a lot of young people. See, the young people in our society. In my opinion, for the most part, you don't see the racial hang-ups as much in the young. You know, they don't.
Oh, you mean the cops, or you mean the?
No, victims? I mean the people protesting.
Oh,
you know, most young people, you don't find as much of the racial hang-ups. They don't like gay people.
There are a lot of young
like,
people protesting, and I give them credit for that.
Yeah.
Although there are people, to be fair, of all ages and all races protesting.
Yeah, but I think. We got an issue here where there are a lot of people looking at that. Now, black people have a particular concern here for obvious reasons. Believe it or not, listen to this, Mark. And I'm an ex-police officer. So I'm at my sister bought a new house. I'm over there and I'm helping her. I got putting pictures on the wall, whatever. So I'm driving home and I got a hammer laying on the seat in my car.
You got a weapon, girl.
A hammer. I looked at that hammer and I thought, man, if the police
better put that under
me,
the seat.
I am going to get shot 20. This is no joke. I took that hammer and I stuck it under the seat
because
I thought
you.
if a cop pulls me over, I don't care. Lights, you know, he's going to say I grabbed the hammer and charged and swung at him 100 times.
I agree with you.
And they're going to look and say, well, he's an ex-police officer. The guy retired as a major in criminal justice. No, he's a black man. He's violent. He tried to kill me. I had no choice but to shoot him in the back 40 times.
I wonder what you think of this. I want to know what our listeners think of this. There's a comedy writer, I believe it works on The Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm.
Who was trying to make the point that whites get away with things that blacks don't get away with. And he started this meme, this Twitter meme, criming while white. Did you read about this?
No. Oh, I heard about it, but I don't know what it meant.
So what he did is he'd be like, I got drunk, passed out, and drove home, the cop let me go. You know, drunk driving. Or I stole a pack of gum, whatever. Criming while white. And the point was originally to sort of illustrate all the minor incidents that white people have gotten away with personally that blacks have not. But as more and more white people posted the things they'd gotten away with, a lot of black people got really angry. Not sometimes at the people who posted, because the idea was to show how unequal the system is. At the same time, it was just really, really depressing people to
see. It was painful to the black people.
Exactly. To hear all the, like, I was just reading that Mark Wahlberg, Marky Mark, famous actor.
Yeah, yeah, Marky Mark and the Fun Bunch.
Right, he robbed a convenience store when he was 16. Did you know that? Served 45 days in jail in 1988, wasn't shot, dead for it, went on to become a successful actor. It's just, there is a two-track system, and it's something we got to stop.
And the other thing that kills me is, well, here's what I see. You can, a cop, once he kills a black man, can tell any kind of story. It don't matter what it is. He could say, you know, I was standing there and a herd of unicorns came by and then a Bigfoot jumped on me and then I had, and my gun went off. It doesn't really matter. And I say this because of Darren Wilson's story. If you can believe that somebody pointed a gun at a black man and he said, you're too much of a, and I'll use the word wussy, that a white, if you can believe that a white cop pointed a gun at a black man and the black man said, well, you're too much of a wussy to shoot me.
I don't believe anyone other than Officer Wilson heard him say that.
I mean, if you can believe that, his story is so cockamamie.
Here's the thing I don't understand, where he said, so Darren Wilson is 6'4", like 240. He's not a little guy.
Uh-huh.
And Michael Brown is like 6'4". They're the same height.
Mm-hmm.
They're both big guys. And he said, like, I have my hand on him. It was like, I think he said a 5-year-old.
With
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, what kind of 6'4"-year-old cop is afraid of some other guy about
the
his same size?
Well, we got to take a break. The number's 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We're here with our man Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and I'm having a...
David Kelly.
David Kelly! I forgot his name! David Kelly. Be right back. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon with Mark Levine. And David Kelly is over there on the boards. And I had to play that Michael Jackson, all the they don't really care about. I just felt like it was appropriate in the whole police brutality thing in the words. And
David made a good point during the break. He was talking about the fact that selling loose cigarettes is apparently, and we don't, by the way, there's no evidence that he did it. But all right, let's say he was selling loose cigarettes. It's kind of like a guy saying, you know, hey, can I get a cigarette? And you're like, you know, I paid good money for this. All right, here's a quarter. All right?
You're right.
Selling individual cigarettes. So what's, if the tax on a cigarette box is $1,
right,
what's the tax on a cigarette? 5 cents?
Right.
This is a nickel? They were depriving the state of New York of a nickel? The guy died for a nickel?
And you got 6 or 7 cops probably making $80,000 or $90,000 each in New York City because that's what they made. And they're all going to take all their time when other crimes are going on to deal with a man who allegedly is selling cigarettes. It's the most obscene. And it's this, what it is, it's so outrageous that it don't you think, Mark, this is so outrageous that it goes to the level of being symbolic of another problem?
I think so, too. And actually, I think this is a good case because there is a video. No one can doubt what happened. People can argue about Michael Brown. I think, you know, the witnesses, most of them said he had his hands up. But all right, there's no video. We can't know what happened. We weren't there. We have seen the video. This guy, you know, he just wanted to be left alone.
Yeah.
Well,
you know what else? The two cops he was talking to, he was engaged in a conversation.
Right.
He had his hands up. He's like, guys,
I didn't do anything.
Stop bugging me all the time. I'm not doing anything. I didn't do nothing. Come on.
Right.
This guy runs from behind. He's talking to the two guys. This guy runs from behind, jumps on his back and grabs him around the neck. Apparently, the two guys in the front were comfortable just talking to him. The officers knew him, which means they already knew he wasn't violent.
Sure. People have been commenting on my Facebook page, and by the way, I encourage you to join there at Mark Levine Talk. And one guy says, you know, a large guy like this, and he was, you know, over 300 pounds. What you can do is you knock his knees and you pull his head back, not his throat, but his head back. He falls because he's a very heavy man, and he can't get up under his own weight. Anyway, it's very easy to subdue a guy.
Did you look at this guy?
It's actually very easy to do. He's out of shape.
He was overweight. He had asthma. He wasn't even in a position. As soon as they grabbed him.
He never attacked the cop. First of all, I don't think you should arrest him in the first place.
No.
Number two, I think if they had said to him, look, we're going to have to take you down to the ground, so I suggest you put your hands, they could have reasoned with him. He was upset. He didn't want to be arrested. He hadn't done anything wrong. You know, a cop comes up to me and says, you know, you were selling cigarettes. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Right.
You know, he's arguing back. I think they could have persuaded him rather than say, look, we're going to have to knock you to the ground.
You know what that was about, Mark?
This was not anger. This was not... You know, you can argue in Ferguson that this was done very quickly, the spur of the moment. They were having a conversation. What's striking to me about the video is there's like 6 minutes where nothing happens at the top of the video as they're talking to the guy.
Well, you know what this was about?
He was,
and I'll tell you what it's about.
Power.
They saw him kind of arguing with the cop. He disrespected
that's exactly what it was.
How dare you disrespect me?
And I think it was the same with Darren Wilson. I think it's like, no, I got the badge. You listen to me. Rather than serve and protect, which is what police officers are supposed
to do. And by the way,
I want to encourage, if anyone is a police officer listening to us, I'd really like to get your perspective. I'd encourage you to call in at 202-580-8988.
And you know what most people still don't know. Do you know, Mark, how far Michael Brown's body was from the car?
I know it was more than 20 feet away from the officer. I don't know how much it was.
Half
from the car.
A football field. So 148 feet.
Yeah, Wilson.
Half a football. This man ran. He lost one of his shoes. This man was running. I mean, think about it. He chased him for half a football field, shooting at him. So my question is this. And now, I'm gonna say one last thing, and we're gonna go to calls because we really got to take calls. But, and he said he turned around and he had his hand in his waist. Right. Well, wait a minute.
Very few people.
But wait a minute. No, this is what Darren Wilson said. But wait a minute. You said he reached for your gun to take your gun and kill you. That's your claim. But now, later on, you say he was reaching for his waist like he was reaching for a gun. So what? You think he had a gun and he just didn't want to waste the bullets? I'm not going to pull a gun out now. I'll just grab yours. How absurd is it to say he tried to take my gun to kill me? Well, obviously he didn't have a gun. But later on, he reached for his waist, man. I thought he had a gun. This was a magic gun, I guess. When he was running, it magically appeared, and he thought, his story has, I would have loved to cross-examine him, because it had so many holes in it, but that ain't the way it goes. That was not the intent. Let's go to line one.
Who do we have?
Who do we have on line one?
Hello?
Hi, welcome to WPFW. You're on the air.
We didn't catch your name.
My name is Tesfa. Good evening.
Oh, Tesfa.
Tesfa, good evening.
Long time caller.
How are you?
I'm good, caller. I'm good.
I will come to New York, but first let me tell you a short story in three sentences.
Okay.
There is a famous Ethiopian journalist who got out with his life after his arms and his vertebrae was broken in many places by the government. Why he reported that? The police officers, the regular police officers who work during the night, get changed by special police at night, just up the road from the American embassy, and shoot people at night. And the shooting could be heard very, very closely from the American embassy.
Thank you very much,
yeah,
Tess.
It happens all over the world.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing, and we certainly appreciate your call. And next, WPFW, you're on the air. And your name is? Hello? You're on the air?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And what's your name?
This is Sincere.
Hi.
Thanks for calling,
Thank
Sincere.
You for calling. And your comment?
Okay, well, my comment is two things. It's very brief. Number one, Mr. Garner was known for peddling cigarettes.
Right.
He wasn't doing it that day.
Right.
And number two, these are not policemen. These are race soldiers. And until you begin to use the right terminology, you're going to be having this circular kind of argument, discussion, definition, and one more person. It's the same thing that happened when the Ku Klux Klan were hanging people. When they were hanging people, I mean, I don't know how many ways people tried to spin it. They didn't try to spin it any kind of way. They put their hoods on, and they said, with no question about it, we are here, we're going to kill you. Okay, we don't like you, and we don't want you here. And that's what that story was. And I think you do a disservice, in a sense, when you try to explain this out. You cannot explain it. These are race soldiers, and their job is to kill black men.
Thank you very much. Certainly appreciate your call. I think a good point that I get from that call. To the black community, what they see is they see physical violence against the black community. And they look at the history of in the United States of physical violence against the black community. And to a black person looks at it and they don't say, well, let's see, there was slavery and black people were beaten and then they were lynched and then they were shot by the, you know what I mean? They don't like separate it and say, well, there were all these different ways they were violence against the black community. To a black person, they just see a continuous record of violence against black people and see it as all together. And I think her point is valid. And I think you really have to accept, you know what I mean? Accept that perspective that, you know, to a black person, violence against black people is nothing new. And we see it all as the same.
We need to punish any police officer, any prosecutor that has a clear disparity based on race.
Yeah.
And until they're punished, it's going to keep
happening. And let me throw one other thing. And I've been saying this. Part of this is we need to accept that what we're looking at is the very fabric of our society. I'll tell you why. If it were only the police, if it were only the prosecutor, then these juries and these grand juries wouldn't keep throwing. We know this.
Many of the grand juries have non-white members on the grand jury.
It was, I think, 14, and they only needed 12. It was 14 whites on that, and Eric Garner, and they only needed 12.
Well, I'd be curious to know what the vote was. They probably won't tell us.
I'm sure they were 14. But at any rate, my point is that we already know, and though we try to pretend, a lot of people try to pretend like they don't know it, but we know the reality. If a white cop shoots a black guy, and they get an all-white jury, they're going to walk every time. We try to pretend like we don't know it, but we know it.
Are not allowed anymore.
Now, the question we have to ask, and this is a rhetorical question, what does that say about the whole connection? A white cop, when he shoots a black person, he knows that he has the full force of our society, both in the criminal justice system and socially supporting him. He doesn't even think about it. You know what I mean?
I think it depends on where he is.
He's in America.
I think Staten Island is known to be the most conservative part of New York City.
Yep.
I think there's a culture in Staten Island that probably doesn't exist in the South Bronx, that probably doesn't exist in Brooklyn.
So he could say, I'm going to get a majority white jury and I know my walk.
Which would be different if he were in Harlem.
So my point is...
So I think that part of it is the culture of where you are.
But regardless of where you are, my point is this. If it's an all-white jury... And a white cop shot a black man, he's walking. And people call me cynical. They've been calling me cynical about all of these.
I know, but we don't have a lot of all-white juries
yeah.
anymore.
But if there is, my point is this. If there is, he's walking. What does that tell you about our society? And look, these cops don't come into our society. They come out of it.
That's true.
Let's go to, next we got somebody on line 3. Welcome to WPFW. You're on the air.
Hey, Garland.
Hey, Eric.
Yeah. Hey, Marco. How's it going?
Hey there.
Hey, Tessa. How's it going? I had a quick comment to tell you, but I got to tell you first. guess who said they got pulled over and they were innocent? You never guess who got pulled over.
Who?
Diane Rehm.
Really?
Yeah, she mentioned so on the air.
What'd she get pulled over for?
They claimed that there was a traffic violation. She was very meticulous. She said she hadn't done anything wrong, but it took two burly cops to come over, you know, light flashing the whole nine yards, and told her that she had done something wrong. Of course, I didn't see it. I didn't have a cell phone, but she thought it was pretty incredible that, you know. But getting back to the point you were talking about, I'm kind of outraged. I mean, not so much of what happened, but this phenomenon is nothing new. The system has been killing black men for decades, and I'm talking more
centuries.
It was legal for centuries. But the thing I'm getting about is the electric chair. I mean, 2/3, if not 3/4, of guys in the electric chair were black males. The state of Virginia, I believe, in 1953, I stumbled across this. This is one of the best-kept secrets. They executed 7 black men within, like, a 5-day stretch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, and nobody really protested. It was just accepted. I mean, it was okay to execute black men. You know, they'd have all-white juries. You know, and it just happened.
Yep.
This happened, but... I was just going to bring that up. Garland, I'm sorry you didn't make the programmers meeting a couple of days ago. I was ejected.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Eric. Thanks for calling.
And I was just looking this up because I was curious. It's no question that blacks are executed in a greater percentage, but the majority of executions are by white. Basically, 56% of all defendants executed are white, 34% are black. So definitely way out of proportion.
Well, the other part of the numbers is this, and because, you know, with the ACLU, if you look at, if you want to predict whether or not somebody will get the electric chair, if the victim is white,
right,
and the defendant is black,
right.
Spend on a defense attorney, there are a number of things that says if you're black, it's overwhelming. The numbers are overwhelming.
If you're poor and black, you're poor and male, and the victim was white, he got no hope.
Yeah. And once again, the people that ask about that, Kelly Thomas, K-E-L-L-Y Thomas. Go on if you happen to. Go on YouTube and look up Kelly Thomas and watch that video and tell me that is not the most. You know what? When I saw that, Mark, when I saw the beating of Kelly Thomas, that's when I said to myself, if you can do that, if a police officer can do what they did to Kelly Thomas and not be convicted,
what can't you do? No one was indicted in that case.
They were indicted. They went to trial. They were found not guilty. So if you can do that,
neither of them were convicted, both not guilty, acquitted. That's amazing.
When I saw that, I said,
I don't know how that can happen, and I don't know how they get rid of jurors who have their eyes open. I mean, yeah. I don't get it. That was a video, like I said, that I couldn't watch.
So
physically stomach.
Don't you feel like this? Looking at that,
6-7 minutes.
If you can do what those two officers did to Kelly Thomas on video and become acquitted and get acquitted for that, then what can't a police officer do? What can't they do?
People just sort of accept authority figures. They just assume that cops are always right.
Here's what I think. I think that middle class white America and upper middle class feels like this. The cops are there to protect us from those people.
Yeah.
And then, don't forget, Kelly Thomas was white, but he was mentally ill
and poor
and he
homeless.
Was homeless. Right. He's one of those people that they're supposed to be protected from.
He was dirty.
From. He was physically one of those people. Physically had grime on him.
Yeah,
street people, right. You know, poor homeless, ill, I don't want to deal with it. The cops have to protect us from those people, and whatever they have to do, you know, that's the way they see it. We got someone else. You're on the air. Welcome to WPFW, and your name is?
Clay, can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear. What's happening,
Clay?
Welcome
to the show.
All right, here's my question. What can we do to protect ourselves from these people? If the EMTs, police, doctors, everyone that was on the scene while Eric Garner slowly died on video were complicit in a kind of criminal neglect, because aren't all of those people who are public services supposed to report any abuse or neglect by law? Then why can't you go against all of those people involved with something called RICO?
Well, there is a lawsuit, a civil lawsuit that Eric Garner's family is filing.
I don't mean civil lawsuits. I mean racketeering, as in to com- commit a criminal conspiracy.
You'd never get a RICO conviction.
You wouldn't
on that.
Get it because you can't prove that the EMT talked to the cops ahead of time and said, we're going to purposely let this black man die.
They don't, and
I
RICO,
mean, if they did, you could, but you're not going
to
have a record
in RICO, you don't necessarily have to prove that, but you have to prove that the act was in furtherance of a criminal group conspiracy.
It's worse in some ways than intentional murder. It's basically people who
non-middle class black male do to protect themselves from protected militias of white cops.
One thing I would do, and I'm afraid it didn't work for Eric Garner, but is record anytime you see. And I've done this myself, by the way. I've just seen police arrest someone. I just take out my cell phone camera. If they see you do it, all the better. They're less likely to mistreat the person if they see you. You note that when they were doing what they did to Eric Garner, they like told back up.
Yeah.
But they didn't stop him from filming,
right?
Because they knew that would be seen as guilt. So take pictures when you can, file complaints, and elect
protest and all that kind of
protest.
To protect myself from dying from protected militias of racism.
Good question, and I got an answer for that. There's nothing you can do. However, let me say this though. I do have something to say though. You can maybe, possibly, and I can't even guarantee you this, lower the probabilities. But as far as that, because what we've heard, and I've read this where a bunch of police agencies would say, well, you should be compliant.
You should be courteous. It's smart when a guy has a gun to be polite officer, put your hands behind your back.
That puts the burden on the victim not to be victimized. And time and time again, we see that people didn't do anything wrong. So I think we should never put the burden on the victim not to be victimized.
And yet at the same time, it would be foolish not to tell people if you are stopped by cops to, particularly if it's you being stopped, you know, to be nice. He does have a gun. He does have a badge. You know, put your hands behind, even if you've done nothing wrong, put your hands behind your back and do what they say.
Oh, he's got his hands behind his back. He's reaching for a weapon.
I understand, Garland, but in terms of a practical thing, you're less likely. If they can't say that you resisted arrest, they don't have the excuse they need.
And you know what? You bring out a very important point, and I'll tell you what it is. And that is that most people, including me, and I'm a retired police officer, feel a certain level of futility. We recognize that to some extent, there's nothing we can do.
You know,
All we got to do is be black in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I look
at it
like a mugger. If a mugger comes up to me on the street and asks me for my wallet, I'm going to give him my wallet because my life and my health are more important to me than whatever dollars I'm carrying in my pocket. If a police officer accosts you on the street, it doesn't matter what a bastard he is. You say nice things to him. If he insults you, if he uses the N-word, whatever he does, you got to be nice back. At the same time, you take a peek at his badge, you see his name, and you file a complaint later, and you go to the hilt. But at that moment, you've got to obey him just like you got to obey the mugger.
Unless, of course,
he's got a gun.
Unless, of course, like has happened all these recent times, he shoots you like 8 or 10 times the second he sees you. That's my point, Mark. That's a point that we have to clearly understand, and that is a source of frustration to the black community.
I'll tell you something else you need to do. You need to get out and vote in local elections and vote for people who care about police brutality.
One of the sources of frustration for black America is recognizing that you can just be black at the wrong time in the wrong place, and you don't have to do anything. That to some extent, in many circumstances, there ain't nothing you can do. You know, the one guy, the cop tells him, oh, I didn't want to see your ID. He reaches for his ID. The cop shoots him for reaching for his ID. So to some extent, what could he really do? That's the frustration. That's the anger. And that's why we got it. Can we get another call?
Yeah, I'm reaching into my pocket now to get my ID, officer. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead and reach for it. Pow!
Well, I don't want to look. It's bad enough as it is. I do want people, though, to be careful out there because if you should do your best to stay alive and do your best.
So let's take one more caller. We only got room for one more. Welcome to WPFW, and your name is?
Me, Roland.
Okay, what's happening?
Hi, Roland.
As always, I love your show.
Thank you.
Real quick, early in your conversation, you said, Mark, that you hope that a jury will send a clear message in the Garner case.
Right, and civil jury.
A big, big, big fine. I know that in the district here, after they rounded everybody up there was a protest going on at National Square, whatever, outside the National Theater.
Okay.
And they made massive arrests. They swooped everybody up, including, I guess you might say, innocent non-participants. And the city ended up paying something like $25 million or more in fines once it finally made its way through the court system. Huge, huge fines. And since that time, they have really done a much different, much better
right.
job.
I can say D.C. police have done a lot better. Sometimes yeah. it takes a massive lawsuit to get a thank city
you,
to change its
thank
policy.
Thank you very much. Yeah, yes.
Roll, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and you know, and here's what I, you know, the last couple callers have brought me to think, caused me to think something, that is, we're in a society where people are starting to, what this causes is this, people are losing confidence in the just, and people already felt that our society wasn't just. But everyone, we've got conservatives now, people looking at it saying, I don't have confidence in our criminal justice system, which means I don't have confidence in my government to do the job. I don't have confidence in the Constitution.
Here's
so
the thing. Here's
that,
the thing.
This
we've
is a major social
government.
Problem.
You know, in this midterm elections, something like a third of everybody voted.
Well, we got to get ready to vote our way out the door here, Mark.
Real quick, in Ferguson, they've got a white Republican mayor who's nowhere to be found. All right, I guarantee you, he's going to be thrown out of office. You got to elect people ahead of time who care about these issues.
If somebody
and look for local elections. You want to find me? You can find me. Go to Facebook. Go to Facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. You can also follow me on Twitter at MarkLevineTalk. And my website is MarkLevineTalk.com. MarkLevineTalk.com.
If you want to get in touch with me, it's at Garland Nixon on Twitter, or Garland, that's G-A-R-L-A-N-D, last name Nixon, N-I-X-O-N. That's Garland Nixon on Facebook, or Garland N. That's Garland, the letter N, at gmail.com. GarlandN@gmail.com. I will talk to you next week. Mark and I'll be here next week.
All right.
And we'll talk to you. And thank you. And next, we got Carol's Place with some really good
music. Hopefully to calm us down. It's kind of hard. We're pretty angry. But if anyone could do it, Carol's Place can.
WPFW, Washington, 89.3 FM.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything's starting to hum. Still, it's a real good bet the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine?
you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. Wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly, yeah. We've only tasted the wine. We're gonna drink.